Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, Zombieland Double Tap, Dolomite Is My Name, the original Dolomite, and the Breaking Bad film on Netflix, El Camino. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the Omen Collection Deluxe Edition. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to talk about is about the new Batman movie. Of course, with the Joker doing so well in theaters, everyone's, of course, looking ahead to the Batman, which is the Robert Pattinson-led cast, and it also has Jeffrey Wright as Commissioner Gordon. This isn't the next in the Gotham element, because you also have Birds of Prey coming out, but they're going onto that dark level of DC that DC has tended to do well with Batman. And I do not think it needs to be applied to Superman and Flash and Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Shazam. But we do have some casting news on the Batman, with Zoe Kravitz taking the role of Catwoman, which is, I think that's a pretty good role. And, you know, what's funny is everyone has been, you know, so hypersensitive about casting and race and people of color and whitewashing the characters. I was waiting for everyone to go bonkers and say, oh, you can't have a black woman play Catwoman, when you have to remember that back in the 1960s, Eartha Kitt played Catwoman in the original television show, along with Julie Newmar. And then, of course, Lee Merriweather played her in the movie that they did. People are overly hypersensitive now about the color of the skin in their superheroes and supervillains. I think Zoe Kravitz, I think she might be a good Catwoman. I could see her do it. I think she certainly has a look that can work in that role. The other one that I'm less excited about is the fact that Paul Dano has been tapped to play the Riddler. And I still don't know. I mean, Frank Gorshin was so perfect, and Jim Carrey did his fine for what he was given and for the insanity that was the 90s when he did Batman Forever. But can Paul Dano? Paul Dano is such an understated actor. I still am not sold on him. But the other two casting news that kind of showed where they're trying to get everything involved. You got Jonah Hill and Seth Rogen have both passed on the Penguin. And I would like, maybe they could ask me to play the Penguin, only I think I'd probably come across more as the Walrus, if that's what they wanted to go for. I could go for the Walrus, make a villain the Walrus, a big chubby dude who, you know, has a big bushy beard. I got a big bushy beard, and I'm chubby. I will gain weight for Warner Brothers if they want me to play the Penguin. The only thing that's starting to bother me about this is I don't want to see a cast of a billion characters. Pick one and go with it. And that's part of the problem they've had since the 90s when they were making these movies. It originally started out, the Batman movie in 1989 had the Joker in it, and that was it. And then in Batman Returns, you had the Penguin and the Catwoman, which worked, I think, in that story. But then they just started loading up all the characters, and I think they were going back to what the original TV show from the 60s was, but that was all camp and fluff and silliness, and having the multi-villains, you weren't exactly exploring characters in that, you were just having goofy, fun comic book villains, and now I'm just worried that they're just going to load it up too much and just have one nemesis to tell a good, solid, single story without cluttering up the movie, and that's what's starting to worry me about the Batman casting news. The next piece of news is something I just have to touch on. I wanted to comment on this. There's a whole hubbub going on now on the internet about Martin Scorsese because, you know, he's promoting The Irishman right now, which comes out on Netflix and in theaters, and it's getting a big push for award season. And Scorsese came out and said some remarks about the Marvel movies, basically. And I think the thing that cheesed people off is he said it's not cinema. And there's a lot of people who got upset, and how dare you, and you know, even like the people involved, like Robert Downey Jr. and Samuel L. Jackson, had to come out and sound off on this topic. And to the point that Martin Scorsese had to come back, and he didn't walk back what he said, but he's trying to mitigate what he said because he's taking a lot of heat. And I think the whole thing's a stupid news story anyways. I get where Martin Scorsese's coming from. Scorsese has never made Marvel movies. And in fact, he was making movies right when blockbusters were becoming a thing. He was cutting his teeth and making an impact at first back in the 70s when you had Jaws in 1975 and then Star Wars in 1977 and then Close Encounters and then E.T. and the other Star Wars movies, where suddenly the series and not that series didn't exist before, because of course you had like the Ma and Pa Kettle series and the Charlie Chan and the Wolfman and all that kind of stuff from the 40s and 50s. But the big blockbuster tentpole movies that Martin Scorsese has never done. He's always done complex character studies. And some of them have been great and some of them haven't been. But the kind of movie Martin Scorsese makes is not the Marvel movie. And so he doesn't appreciate it. And that's okay. It's okay if a guy in his 70s who's been doing this for decades isn't appreciating the wow version of what pop culture cinema is. I mean, so many times we hear these stories of so-and-so filmmakers trashes the Marvel movies. Who cares? If you like the Marvel movies, go see the Marvel movies. Obviously, people like the Marvel movies. I love them. I love the interconnected nature because I think that that's what is taking what was in the comic books and finally applying it to movies, even though they've been trying to do that for years. But that doesn't mean that this isn't cinema. And I mean, it depends on how you define cinema. I mean, it's very personal to Scorsese. Scorsese would go to these small movie houses in New York or Los Angeles. And he liked that intimate nature. And Marvel cinema is so different than art house cinema, but it's okay. We can all like different things. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Doolittle. Opens on January 17th.
Are you Dr. Doolittle?
We have no choice but to embark on this perilous journey.
Everyone pack your bags!
You can talk to animals.
Somehow, we just belong together.
This one stars Robert Downey Jr. as Dr. Doolittle, and there's not much in this trailer because there's not much to the story. I mean, you know the story. You see him on this ship, and they're going on this high adventure. And I got to say, I like this better than the previous Dr. Doolittle movies with Eddie Murphy, where it just became a stupid comedy, a suburban dad who could talk to animals and was a vet, which I thought those were funny for what they are. But what makes this movie exciting for me to see is it looks like it's actually going to be going back to the Dr. Doolittle books. And I read some of those when I was younger. I didn't read all of them because there's like a billion of them. But I do remember them going on these high adventures in the high sea and going to other countries and running into different adversaries. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it. The January release date does have me a little worried. But as we've seen, tentpole releases are now all over the place. So that's not as big of a warning sign. The next one I want to hit is Jungle Cruise, which opens on July 24th.
Legend has it there is a tree in the Amazon that possesses unparalleled healing powers. And the arrowhead is the key to unlocking it.
Of all the jungle cruises you can take in the Amazon, this one is undoubtedly the cheapest.
We're headed upriver to Lagrimas de Cristal. We must secure our travel. Come on.
Not a good time.
My brother and I are looking for passage upriver.
You're going to beg me to turn back.
Well, I look forward to disappointing you.
Now, look, I get it. This is another one of those Disney rides that is being made into a film. And sometimes they work. Like the original Pirates of the Caribbean movie was really pretty good. Haunted Mansion, not so much. But at least Jungle Cruise, it's taking the template of the jungle adventure, which I've always loved. I've always loved this sort of jungle adventure going back to the Indiana Jones and the old serials. And you've got Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson. Of course, he's going to be playing a little bit off of his Jumanji fame. It looks like it's going to be fun and whimsical. I mean, it's not going to be as intense as a Tomb Raider movie, but it's still going to be, I think, an enjoyable little romp. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the original Dolomite and the biopic Dolomite Is My Name. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. We're going to start off with the original Dolomite. Rudy Ray Moore stars in this blaxploitation crime drama about a pimp named Dolomite, who uses his army of kung fu fighting prostitutes to kick a drug dealer out of his town.
Dolomite is my name. I've got an all-girl army that knows what to do. They'll practice kung fu. I put my finger in the ground and turn the whole world around.
You know, you're still the best man that I know in bed.
And tell him I want him out of here in 24 hours. And 23 of them are already gone. Yes, I'm Dolan.
Kevin Carr is my name, and saying things on the radio that I can't say on the radio is my game. If you know Dolomite, you know what his catchphrase is, and you know you can't even put it on the radio. I was uncomfortable even putting the bleep version on the radio because it's so clear what he's saying. Here's the thing with Dolomite. I find 2019 to be such an interesting time in film because when there's a movie that comes out that I do not have the context of, it gives me an opportunity and an excuse to go up and dig up the original stuff. Like when they did the Shaft movie this summer, which wasn't good. It gave me a chance to go back and watch the other Shaft movies. I'd never seen the original Shaft, and I'd never seen the Samuel L. Jackson sort of remake slash sequel to Shaft. And that gave me the opportunity to go back and watch those, and the same thing here. So weirdly enough, 2019 has been a huge educational time for me and when it comes to blaxploitation cinema. Now, the original Dolomite, I'd never seen. It came out in 1975. I was four. You know, I was busy watching Jaws and then, something like Star Wars, and then that took over my world. And my parents weren't about to take me to a movie with kung fu fighting prostitutes in it. But I've always heard of Dolomite and always been curious about it. It finally gave me a chance to see it because we have Dolomite Is My Name with Craig Brewer directing and Eddie Murphy starring in it. It comes out on Netflix next week, but it's in limited release this week. So I said, let me go find Dolomite. You can find it online. It's on for free. You can go to Tubi TV. I don't know if you can get that app on either your Roku or your set-top box or on your tablet or something like that. But Tubi TV has it and has ads embedded in it, but it gives you the full movie. And I got to say, Dolomite is a hilarious film. It is wildly inappropriate. It's violent. It's got a lot of swearing. It's got sex in it. It's got some nudity. It's not great nudity, but it's nudity. It's a very cheap movie. It was made on the cheap. And like Rudy Ray Moore, he's fat. He's not terribly attractive. And he's supposed to be this really cool pimp. And it works because that's the setup. And the movie is absurd and silly. And the plot does not make a whole lot of pragmatic sense because it's him being released and pardoned from prison for, he's in jail for like cocaine possession and stolen furs that were apparently planted on him by the police. And somehow the warden has the authority to pardon him. And then he sends him out to go after Willie Green, who's the real villain here, who's the real bad guy who's on the street selling dope and everything. It's a very slapshod movie, and you watch these films from the 70s, especially these fiercely independent ones that are done with just a group of friends and doing it on a shoestring budget, you know, mortgaging their house and selling their cars to make this movie. And you see the stilted acting and the wooden direction and the cheesy set design. I remember I was just referring to the movie Spawn of Slithus to my family, because it's another great movie of just terrible filmmaking proportions from the 70s that is absurd, but also a hoot to watch. Now, the low budget nature of movies today that you get with video, overly video, look and bad special effects and sometimes some really cheesy digital effects don't hold the same charm, at least to me, as the stuff that was done in the 70s, because even though a lot of that is awkwardly edited and hard to put together, there are a lot more obstacles to jump over from a technical perspective. And Dolomite, I mean, it does run a little bit long because it's not a terribly cohesive and well-edited movie, but it's so absurd where suddenly he's got this army of prostitutes who know kung fu and they show up at all these weird places and somehow everybody's behind him. Where he makes his money and how he makes his money and why he's not a criminal anymore doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then he breaks off into these moments where he's doing a stand-up routine because that's what Rudy Ray Moore was. He was a comedian. And they actually at one point call him Rudy Ray Moore in the movie accidentally. I don't know why. And also the terrible fight choreography. This guy did not know Kung Fu, even though his character did. But Dolomite's a hoot to watch now, especially with it just dripping in the 70s fashion and slang and era. I got to say, check out Dolomite. It totally rocks, especially from a historical perspective.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is Dolomite Is My Name. Craig Brewer directs this real-life story of Rudy Ray Moore and how he struggles to make his film Dolomite.
Hey, you know, Auntie, I was thinking about putting out a comedy record.
Comedy? You've been a singer? A shake dancer?
I come up with a new character.
Dolomite is my name?
Oh, he's back.
What'd you do to your hair? You look like a pimp.
It's all pretend. I just created a character.
Whatever it takes, I'm ready to do it. I got to be totally outrageous.
It's filthy. You've got a product here that you can't sell or promote.
Like classic movies about movies, such as The Disaster Artist from last year, in which it was James Franco playing Tommy Wiseau making The Room, or Ed Wood, which is, of course, Tim Burton directing Johnny Depp as Ed Wood making Plan 9 from Outer Space. I love these films because I've done some independent filmmaking myself. I know what a labor of love it is. And I know what it's like to just go for broke and have everybody in on it and make a terrible piece of movie. And every now and then you get it right. And every now and then you get something that is warts and all a problematic film, but it still is entertaining. It's just a matter of time before Kevin Smith stops making Jane Silent Bob movies and making a movie about him making his movies. Dolomite Is My Name tells that true life story, and it plays like a biopic, but it doesn't do it end to end. It just starts when Rudy Ray Moore is just getting the idea to create the character of Dolomite, where he's kind of this failed stand-up comedian, and Eddie Murphy does a great job in it. Now, of course, it's an easy part for Murphy to play because he is essentially a comedian himself, but he's actually relatively close to how old Moore was when he made these films. You get that sense of camaraderie with the people involved in making it, and you get the feel of what it's like on that grassroots, on the ground floor, trying to make this thing, and he's going for broke. He doesn't even own a house, so he's living in the theater where he's shooting this movie, and he's pretending he has a secretary, but he's playing himself as a secretary, which is all these little tricks that independent filmmakers have used, especially way back in the 70s before they became really well known. And Craig Brewer, as a director, he gives it a real charm. That's something that Craig Brewer is really good at doing. If you recall, he did movies like Black Snake Moan and Hustle and Flow, and he did Footloose. He brings a real charm to it, but he does bring that somewhat urban edge to it. And I think he manages to balance between cultural references, and it makes this movie a lot of fun. I'm not necessarily saying Dolomite Is My Name is a great movie that's going to make tons and tons of money and is going to win Academy Awards and everything. But doggone it if it isn't entertaining. And it's got some great performances, and you've got some familiar faces like Keegan-Michael Key and Wesley Snipes showing up as the different characters. It's a fun little movie. It's worth checking out. It's out in limited release now in theaters in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio. It's playing at the Gateway, but it's going to be on Netflix next week. In any respect, I got to say that Dolomite Is My Name. Totally rocks. Worth seeing. Check it out.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and Zombieland Double Tap. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. Princess Aurora is planning on marrying her prince, but she faces a problem when the queen plots to start a war with the fairy creatures in the moors.
I remember the story of an evil witch.
When I look out my window,
and the princess she cursed to sleep forever.
Many sights to see.
The story became legend.
And when I look in,
but this is no fairy tale.
I'm sure your kind would agree. If I didn't know better, I'd say you were making a threat.
Okay, the history behind this film, first of all, it's a sequel to Maleficent, which came out about 5 years ago. And that was right at about the time when Disney was remaking a lot of its animated films into live-action movies. And by now, they're just doing almost one-to-one adaptations, like Beauty and the Beast, certainly The Lion King, Aladdin to a certain degree. And they have some changes to them, but it's very much a live-action or photorealistic CGI realization of the original animated films. When they first started doing this, they were trying to do it from a different angle sometimes. And this was their attempt to redo Sleeping Beauty. And what they did is they said, well, let's make a movie from Maleficent's point of view. Maleficent, of course, is the villain in Sleeping Beauty. She's the evil sorceress and turns into the dragon at the end. And in my opinion, is probably the best evil adversary of any of the Disney princesses, especially in the 20th century and possibly even going into the 21st century. So I thought this was an interesting spin. I always thought Beauty and the Beast was the best of those Disney princess movies when you consider Snow White and Cinderella as the other ones. I always liked Sleeping Beauty the best. And I remember when they made Maleficent, it was, oh, they're flipping the script. They're making it about Maleficent. And it's essentially framed, that movie was framed as, well, as the story got told, she became the villain, but she really wasn't. Here's the true story. And the good guys really weren't all good guys. I thought Maleficent, the original, was uneven at times. Angelina Jolie was the best part of that movie, and she was great. But Elle Fanning as Aurora, she was terrible in that. And the fairies, the three aunt fairies who took care of her, they were awful. They annoyed me. But I thought it was enough of Angelina Jolie commanding the role that it worked. Now they've made a sequel, but this is not anything that's kind of already written in stone. They're not just flipping the script. They're taking a flipped script and then making a sequel to it. Reminds me a little bit of what they did when they had Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, and then they did the sequel, Alice Through the Looking Glass, a couple years ago, where they did draw from Lewis Carroll's stories, but they kind of manufactured their own movie in itself. It was, for the most part, an amalgamation of Lewis Carroll elements put together in a ill-fitting story. And I feel that's the same way with this one. This is all manufactured. There's nothing from the original Sleeping Beauty story that they're really playing off of in this. It's just the evil queen versus the good queen, but the good queen really isn't that good of a queen. She's played by Michelle Pfeiffer. Again, Angelina Jolie in this movie, 5 years after the first Maleficent, is the best thing about the film. She looks great, and she commands a performance, she commands a screen, but she doesn't get as much screen time. She certainly doesn't get as much screen time as a title character should. And that's a shame, because most of it falls on the shoulders of Aurora, and Elle Fanning just really can't carry this movie. I don't think she can play the smaller roles, and she can carry a movie like Teen Spirit, which is a much more pragmatic, down-to-earth, but sort of as that grand fantasy element, you lose her acting in it. Michelle Pfeiffer's good in this as the good queen who actually is evil. The prince is throwaway. This is Disney really trying to walk a fine line between retaining its image of Sleeping Beauty and the elements of that film and the high fantasy and the beautiful set design, albeit digital, and the special effects, and then also trying to tell a more mature story, which involves battles and fight sequences and explosions, so it can get a little intense. If you got young kids, if you got a 5-year-old who loves Sleeping Beauty, you may want to think twice before seeing this, because the battle sequences can be a little intense and it can be a little bit harrowing. I mean, fairies get killed in this movie. I'm just letting you know, or at least the equivalent of fairy death. So, I mean, the movie itself, I really didn't think it held together. I thought the writing was really forced. It didn't quite gel. And it's not like the first movie gelled, but it was held together by Angelina Jolie. With having her in this less, I think it gels even less. And in adding all these other fairy creatures, it felt like it was trying to spin off a Carnival Row, which wasn't very good in itself. But in the end, I'm just going to have to say this movie didn't quite work. Maybe it's a little bit too much too late. I'm going to have to say Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Zombieland Double Tap. It's been 10 years since the zombie apocalypse hit, and Little Rock is getting restless, wanting a boyfriend and breaking away from her adoptive family.
Welcome to Zombieland. Life is about more than just survival. We were a family. Dysfunctional, sure, but what family isn't?
It felt so good to be on the move again.
Whoa!
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Hi, I'm Columbus.
Madison.
This is Tallahassee.
Hey, Paul Blart. Is this your dad?
My sister is gone. She picked up a boy. He's from Berkeley.
Berkeley. We're gonna go get her. We ride it, Dawn.
This movie is interesting because I don't think anyone ever really asked for the sequel. When they said they're going to make a sequel, a lot of people were excited because Zombieland was kind of the surprise hit that came out of nowhere. And I had a lot of fun watching that one. When I watched the trailers for this one, I was a little bit nervous. Not only is it like, well, gosh, it's been 10 years. Are we a little too late or a little too much too late? But also, if you watch the trailers, there's no zombies in the trailers. Not that I'm dying for zombies, because I do think the zombie world has been kind of overdone recently. I think it, you know, we can dial back on the zombies and find some other monsters, you know, especially after The Walking Dead has, you know, kind of run its course or stumbled its course. But this one, I was reluctant to see it because I just said, this looks like it's forced. It looks like everybody's just, they're going to have the best jokes in the trailer. But I went to go see it. And I got to say, this movie is way better than it has any business being. It's not a well-made movie. I mean, it's not really even plot-driven or character-driven. It's more or less situational. It's just ultimately a bunch of gags with the zombies doing this, that, and the other. But what makes it work is just set up for the comedy stuff. And the comedy stuff, they move it along fast enough and they even it out enough. Now, there's a lot of jokes that don't land. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of jokes that don't land or some that are forced or some that they're trying to be irreverent and referencing the last movie and it doesn't quite click. But there's also a lot of really funny things in there. There's a lot of jokes that do land. And yeah, there's stuff that gets a little bit derivative. They have some stuff. There's one particular scene that's almost a direct ripoff of Shaun of the Dead. So it's not like they've done brand new stuff with this film, but it works for what it is. It's an enjoyable movie. It was entertaining. I was surprised at how much I liked it. And, you know, I laughed. I found myself laughing. It's so funny because sometimes, you know, I go see so many movies. And at times it's a chore to go see a movie. And even if it's a movie I'm kind of interested in seeing, maybe I've seen the movies I've seen this week, none of them have been really any good. And I'm just like, oh, and I got to drag myself to the theater. And I'm watching the film and I said, hey, that wasn't a bad time. This is not going to change anything. It's not nearly as fresh as the original film. I mean, the zombies have been lying around for 10 years. It's going to smell a little bit. But it works. And the other thing, there's a character in here. They introduce a new character. They have a couple new characters. But one of the characters played by Zoe Deutsch, and she is this Forever 21 girly girl that they run into. And you see her in the trailers and she's like wearing pink and she's blonde and she's cute and she's da-da. And you look at the trailers and you go, oh my God, she's going to be the most annoying character in the film. But you know what? There's something about the way they present her that she became my favorite character. And it's not because she's pretty and cute. She became my favorite character just because they used her just at the right times and they kept her personality bubbly and goofy enough that made it funny, but didn't oversell it and didn't overwork the character. And it worked as a great foil against the really dark characters, you know, the original cast of Zombieland. So yeah, they made some interesting choices that I think worked. So I'm going to have to say that when it comes down to it, Zombieland Double Tap kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about El Camino, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring the Omen Collection Deluxe Edition. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with a movie that's not actually in theaters. Well, actually, it is in theaters. El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, had a limited theatrical run last week. But anyone can watch it now on Netflix. It's on the service. It dropped on the 11th, which was a week ago. And I thought I'd cover this one because it's a big movie and it's a big noticeable film that people are talking about. A lot of people are generating buzz about it. And it's the follow-up to the Notorious Cable series in which we discover the fate of Jesse Pinkman and where he is headed in his future.
You ready?
Yeah.
The That's not a good trailer, but that's the trailer they have. Most of it's images. There's not a whole lot of dialogue in the trailer. So this movie is not meant to be a definitive ending to the Breaking Bad saga. It gives you the ending to Jesse. If you recall, at the end of the finale of Breaking Bad, he just gets in the car and goes. And we don't know where he ends up. And this puts a cap on his story. I mean, we know where Walter White ended up, but we don't know whatever happened to Jesse Pinkman. And I always felt when it came to the Breaking Bad story, Jesse's character was the most tragic, has had the most depth to it, and is was of the most interest. And I really liked him as a character. I think even better than Walter White. I think Walter White was a little more straightforward, but Jesse was the real tragic, almost Shakespearean character in the series. So I always wanted to know where he went and what happened to him. And I think that that's a great idea that they did this. And I'm glad that they kept this contained. Now they have little bits and pieces. There's a little bit in there where they have a flashback and they bring back Bryan Cranston. So you have him interacting with Walter White. And you do have these callbacks to the series. Now, if you've not watched the series lately, if you've not done your binge watching recently, there's a 5 or 6 minute update in the beginning of the film. Kind of like how, I mean, I know I'm comparing Breaking Bad to Downton Abbey, but kind of how Downton Abbey had this 10-minute, here's where the story is now video on YouTube that you could go watch and catch up, or just, if you've not watched the series in a while, or just learn stuff if you've never watched the series to sort of see what's going on in Downton Abbey. The Breaking Bad movie has this 10-minute recap before the film, and that's great because even if you've seen the series, it reminds you of all these critical points that they're going to call back to and all these different characters and how they tie in. In essence, this is really just another episode of Breaking Bad. It's just twice as long as an average episode is. It's a very simple arc of Jesse just trying to start a new life. It's trying to get him away from Albuquerque, away from all the pain and the hurt and the issues that he had. And of course, like anything that happens in Jesse's life, it's not always so easy, but it works as a film. I mean, it's satisfying. I think, at least for me, having watched Breaking Bad, now I watched it on binge watch. I never watched it when it was on the air. So I don't know, maybe people who are diehard older fans might be expecting more, but I mean, it's a pretty simple story and it's a pretty simple trajectory. And it does also, tie into together Jesse Plemons' character, who's the most sociopathic in there. They give you a little more depth to him and they give you a little more interest in him. So, it's neat to see him back because he's so unsettling. But overall, I'm going to have to say El Camino, it's a satisfying end to the Pinkman arc, we'll say. It rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office really quick. And last week, Joker won the box office again, which I don't think was a huge surprise because it made so much money its first weekend. It had to win again. I don't think it's going to win again this weekend because even with a 40% drop, you're well into the 30 million range. But Adam's Family came out of nowhere and made 30 million, did way better than people expected, especially considering some of the bad reviews that it was getting. Gemini Man, not so good, made less than 21 million. For a movie like that, that costs like $140 million to make, that's not good. It's going to have to rely on the overseas, which it probably will get decent overseas because it's a Will Smith movie. And I mean, he could sit there and burp the alphabet for 2 hours and you probably get good overseas numbers for Will Smith there. Jexy flopped. It came in with just over $3 million, barely made it into the top 10 at number 9. So it was not a great weekend for a lot of the new films out there, but it should start speeding up in a couple weeks. This week, I really do think that it's at least Maleficent is being picked as the one that's going to win, and I think it's going to have some competition with Adam's Family. But who knows? I'd like to see Zombieland do a little bit better than I would have expected, but it's going to be between Joker and Maleficent. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week on the new home cinema, I want to talk about the Omen Collection, the deluxe edition. It's a 5-disc set from Scream Factory. It releases all 4 movies and the 2006 remake about a powerful politician whose son turns out to be the Antichrist.
For generations, the Thornes have been a family of tremendous wealth, position, and power. The perfect marriage of Ambassador Robert Thorne and his wife Catherine was fulfilled by the birth of their son, Damien. And then, when the child was 5 years old, something terrible happened.
I was at the hospital, Mr. Thorne, the night your son was born. I saw its mother.
This is not a human child.
I am a big fan of 70s horror because 70s horror was not caught up in special effects too much. It wasn't until the 80s that things got really good. And there's nothing wrong with some good special effects splatter gore, like John Carpenter's The Thing, one of my favorite movies of all time. But I love the purity of horror movies in the 70s where they were trying to tell grown-up stories. I mean, you look at this, you look at The Exorcist, you look at Audrey Rose, you know, even the original Halloween were relatively simple stories with relatively simple filmmaking. And there was also a rash of satanic movies or movies that were like religiously oriented with demons and the devil, you know, with things like Rosemary's Baby was in the 60s, but that kind of led the pack. And of course you had the aforementioned Exorcist, and The Omen's one of the classic ones out there. Now, what's great about this one has great coverage on here. This is a fantastic set to get. It has a new 4K remaster of the original. The original movie looks fantastic on disc. I remember the first time I saw it, I was on VHS tape and a pan and scan. This is so much different. And they've got interviews with like all the different stars and the people involved in the film. And they've got documentaries on each of them. They got still galleries, audio commentaries, and these go through all the films. It's not all just loaded up on one movie. The first Omen is easily the best. That one is a classic movie, and it's creepy, and it tells a great story, and it's weirdly relevant today. Then Omen 2 is actually not bad itself. It gets a little bit more into the sensational side, but one of the things that makes Omen 2 work is you've got Damien coming to the realization of who he is, and that's the real neat part of it. I actually recently rewatched Brightburn, and that's something they're missing in Brightburn. There's no realization and anguish of realizing that he's meant to destroy the world in Brightburn. Whereas in The Omen 2, Damien, he realizes he was raised as a human, but then realizes, oh my gosh, I'm the Antichrist. And you actually have a sense of understanding there. And I think that's a real turning point. And that's the thing that makes the second Omen work. Now, the third Omen, the final conflict, that gets a little corny and cheesy, especially at the end with some of the religious elements to it. And the other thing that I think is funny about that one is, the first movie took place in, I think it was made in 1975, and Damien was 5 at that time, so he was born, or 76. By the time he's 32, which is how old Damien is in the final conflict, it takes place in 2003. Yet it's made in 1981, so it's 22 years in the future, but it doesn't look like it's 22 years in the future. You have to kind of ignore the time. Omen 4, The Awakening was an old TV movie. That's just sort of in there just because of, to make it complete. And then there's the remake made in 2006, which I gotta say, I enjoyed the remake. I thought the remake was a very fair remake. I mean, it didn't over-sensationalize the movie. It didn't try to better the movie necessarily. And at times it does do a bit of a shot-for-shot remake. But I think it's got a good cast, and it's creepy enough, and it translates well. I think, and the thing that carries it is the cast, particularly Pete Postlethwaite as the Doctor Who priest, and because of course the original priest in that movie was the second Doctor. But overall, if you're a fan of this series, if you're a fan of The Omen, if you're a fan of 70s horror, this is worth picking up. It's a great box set. It's a great way to get all the movies all in one, and they've got great special features. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other movies this week that are out on DVD and Blu-ray include Crawl, Stuber, The Art of Self-Defense, Three from Hell, and The Haunting of Hill House. And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Black and Blue, Countdown, and The Lighthouse. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.